Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Friday, July 8th. Derek Van Riper here with Al Melchior. Welcome to those of you watching us live on YouTube. We usually go live at 4 o'clock Eastern each and every Friday. As we do every Friday, we dig into some interesting hitters that are hopefully available in many leagues. It's a variety of different players each and every week. We got some shallow league bats, we got some deep league bats, we got shallow league pitchers, we got deep league pitchers. The one thing we don't have a lot of again this week are viable relievers. So as things appear to be going into the weekend, it does not look like a particularly great weekend at the moment to find saves if that's the category that you're chasing, but a lot can change between Friday afternoon and Sunday evening when waivers run in a lot of leagues. Al, let's start with some shallow league bats. Let's start with one that you put on the rundown today. Nathaniel Lowe, it seems like he's making some of the adjustments that people were hoping for. I know our friend Eno Saris wrote him up as one of his preferred sleepers for this year because he shows underlying abilities to hit the ball very hard. In the past, it's come with a lot of ground balls. It seems like more recently, he is unlocking that power in a way that could be really a game changer, even in shallow leagues.
And I think that's the operative phrase in shallow leagues, because we have talked about Lowe pretty recently. I want to say maybe 2-3 weeks ago on here when he started unlocking some of that power, getting really hot. Nothing has changed for Lowe since then. So he's still hitting home runs, still producing runs, still over the last 6 weeks or so hitting above 300. And the only thing that isn't really changing at the same pace is his roster rates. So he's still very available in a lot of 12 teamers. And when you're talking about a hitter who, you know, if you take the last quarter season and you pace that out over a full season, I mean, you're looking at somebody who would be on a 320, 40 homer, 100 RBI, 100 run pace. And yet you could still probably go in your 12 team league and go pick him up this weekend. And you probably should.
Yeah, definitely an opportunity in those more shallow leagues. And I think where he hits in the lineup, the playing time volume, those things are also at a level where you can trust him in those more shallow formats where he's still available. And I think he went from a player that earlier in the season in deeper leagues, maybe you had him in a 15-team league on your roster, he might have been in and out of the lineup based on the schedule. He's probably in more consistently right now if you've been rostering him up to this point. But the K rate's down just a little bit from where it was last year. And the big change, of course, the ground ball rate for the season, down from 54.5% for Lowe a year ago to 45.9% so far this season. On pace for about 25 home runs for the full season. But as you said, Al, if he keeps doing what he's been doing, he might get closer to 30 by season's end. I think Ramon Laureano is worth talking about as well. Again, not really available in anything deeper than probably 12 teams at most, but he is playing really well since coming back from his PED suspension. Lowest K rate of his career so far, 22.9%, swinging at pitches outside the zone less often this season than he did a year ago. Is hitting the ball on the ground a bit more, but really a do-everything sort of player and someone that could actually end up on a better team at the trade deadline as well, because I think he, along with names like Brian Reynolds and Cedric Mullins, makes a lot of sense for contending teams looking for an upgrade in their outfield.
Yeah, as long as he can sustain what he's been doing for the last few weeks, where we're really seeing a version of Laureano that's much more similar to what we saw just a few years back when he was considered like a mid-round power speed threat. And now, you know, leagues where he was, you know, drafted, like I said, in the middle rounds, now he's really available in those shallower leagues and looking very much like somebody who can give you that same across the board contribution in different categories. So we're seeing more power from him in the last month plus or so. And maybe that does make him a more attractive trade candidate for Oakland, and then you get him in a better situation. Obviously, about as bad of a situation as you could have him right now. At least he is hitting in the upper portion of the A's order, but that's the only thing we could really look for an upgrade there, and maybe we do get that in a few weeks.
We got one other shallow league focused question, because I think he's been snapped up in most two catcher leagues by now. Is Cal Raleigh, with his recent surge behind the plate, is he playing his way into single catcher leagues for you? Is he even maybe a top 10 catcher at this point based on what he's providing on a day-to-day basis?
He absolutely is. And I was looking at catcher roto value rankings a little bit earlier today, And I want to say Raleigh was like 15th or 16th. Now, that includes the earlier portion of the season when he was striking out at an obscene rate, hitting well below 200. And even with that baked into his total stats right now, still well inside the top 20. Now, if you take what he's done for the last month or so, maybe he strikes out a little bit more going forward. I mean, he's just radically rolled back that strikeout rate. So even if there's a little regression there, I think he's top 10, top 12 with all the power that he provides.
He's really just taken over that role for Seattle with this recent surge in performance. And I'm right there with you. I'm on board with Raleigh in leagues where you just don't have one of those top seven, top eight type catchers already locked in on the production side, because I think playing time and underlying numbers here look really good. I make leaderboards most weeks of all the players we talk about on the show just to get a sense for how they really stack up to each other. Cal Raleigh has the highest barrel rate of all the hitters on the rundown. And that includes a couple guys like Daniel Vogelbach, who barrels the ball pretty often. Ramon Laureano, we just talked about, sitting at 10%. I mean, 15.9% in the barrel rate is a really nice thing to see for Cal Raleigh, and he's more than just that with that K rate also headed in the right direction. So don't sleep on him if you're in a single catcher league, because previously he may have not been on your radar. I'm curious to know what you are making of Nico Horner these days. Of course, he's eligible at second and shortstop in most leagues. What's the cutoff for the types of leagues in which you're going to roster him and actually have him in your lineups?
I think it's somewhat based on categorical needs, because Horner is definitely a batting average guy. I mean, he's now showing for the second year in a row that he could be a 300 hitter. He's not a great contributor to steals, but he helps there somewhat. The power's there. I mean, it's compared to most players, you would look at the power stats, whether you're just looking at the four home runs or you're looking at the barrel rate and you're saying, this is a player that doesn't have much power, but it's more power than I think pretty much all of us expected. So I think for Horner, the real kind of pivot point with him having broader appeal is he going to be able to produce more runs? And I think now that he is hitting higher up in the order, that he can do that. The Cubs offense actually hasn't been bad. We'll see what it looks like after August 2nd, after the trade deadline. But I don't know that they have that many tradable players in the everyday lineup as it is. So I think Horner could help there as well. So, you know, obviously, if you need batting average, I think he's a 12-teamer guy. And the comparison that I made in the waiver column this week was with Luis Urias, who is obviously a batting average contributor, probably due for a little bit of regression, but somebody that you could count on to hit 300, 310 the rest of the way. Horner's peripherals, if you look at how the two of them have built their profile, they're extremely similar, except that Horner actually does steal some bases. And yet Horner is pretty much completely available in 12-teamers, maybe even in some slightly deeper leagues, and you can't get Luis Urias anywhere. So there's a big gap there. I'm not sure how much that says that Urias might be a little bit over-rostered, but definitely I think it says something about Horner needing to be picked up in some leagues.
Yeah, there's a couple things that are working in Horner's favor. He's playing great defense, which is going to keep him in the lineup every single day. I mean, the lineup position that you talked about, I think, is important just in terms of the counting stats being a tick better for someone that doesn't bring a lot of power to the table. If he hits three or four more home runs the rest of the season, I think that's kind of a win in that category. But he's 7-for-8 as a base stealer, and that's backed by being someone with the sprint speed that's currently in the 92nd percentile. So he's a good runner, a very good runner, the kind of guy that could keep getting those green lights with that success rate he's showing so far. And being on a team that, while the offense maybe isn't terrible right now, I think post-deadline, as you suggested, they could take a step back, even if they don't really move a lot of guys. Even if Wilson Contreras stays, they're trying to manufacture runs. They're not going anywhere as far as the playoffs go. That bodes well, I think, for players like Horner getting more chances to run. If they're playing spoiler, they'll probably be a bit more aggressive on the base pass than they would be if they were actually in the mix for a playoff spot. Rafael Ortega still there with the Cubs right now. I think the only real risk I see with him is that he could get traded to a contender and then fall into a bench role, because I think that's probably what he is on a playoff-bound team, even though he's been a nice story since really kind of breaking through in the second half of last season.
I do wonder about that with Ortega, and if I didn't take a closer look, I would absolutely agree with you. But I think that since he's become a Cubs, since he came over to the Cubs last year, that he has been a little bit more of a well-rounded offensive player. So he's hit for average both seasons that he's been with the Cubs, more so last year than this year. Currently has a 261 average, but hit 291 last year. 11 home runs last year. So far, 4 home runs this year. I think maybe he's gotten a little bit cheated as far as that's concerned. He probably should have more home runs than Nico Hoerner does. And I have to admit, also, I'm surprised that over between last season and this season, 19 stolen bases for Ortega. So that's a pretty well-rounded profile that he's got. There's a little bit of power there. And, you know, somebody who could finish the year with 15 to 20 stolen bases and maybe a little bit of upside still with that batting average.
I think I've got a few outfielders coming up that are available in a few more leagues that I have a little more confidence in, but I think Ortega does scratch the can do a little bit of everything itch if you're trying to just find a balanced player to slot in to maybe a fifth outfield spot in a league that has 14 plus teams. The other names that I think are interesting, one, a former Cub, after we talked about a couple of current Cubs, Jonathan Villar has popped up with the Angels. He's getting a chance to play every day, it appears, for now at least, at third base. And he's let off 4 consecutive games since joining the team last weekend. I think the situation is better. He's got Trout and Ohtani and Taylor Ward and Jared Walsh all hitting behind him as a member of the Angels. So am I wrong for having some interest in Jonathan Villar, even though we're pretty clear on what his skills flaws are at this point in his career?
I would agree with you. It's a much better situation. Obviously, more playing time. Hitting leadoff is a nice thing in that upper part of the lineup. I mean, the Angels overall have been a pretty abysmal offensive team, but that top half is obviously really good and could help VR's value out a lot. The little bit of hedging that I'm doing here, and DVR, I think you probably remember, we talked about this, maybe it was even back in March, about how all of a sudden, VR is somebody we probably should expect to hit more home runs than have stolen bases. And so I think just kind of that automatic urge that we've always had where we see, okay, VR is getting pretty regular playing time. That means steals. I'm not so sure that that's true now.
Yeah, 7-for-7, though, this season now, split between the two teams. I'm looking at what he did last year, 18 homers, 14 steals. That was in 505 plate appearances. I think given his age, the previous stolen base ceiling is much lower, right? We're not talking about a guy that's going to have a 35 steal pace over the course of the second half. That's not who he is anymore. But if he's the equivalent of a 15-15 player at the top of that lineup, and if you're in an OBP league, he gets a little bit of a nudge there. Less of a liability in an OBP league than he is in a batting average league. At least that's been the case in the past. I know he's walking less than he has in 5 years or so far in 2022. But I am finding myself somewhat intrigued in just about any deep mixed league. Again, 14, 15 teams and deeper. There's some versatility in terms of eligibility in some leagues. But more importantly, stolen bases are hard to find. At least in this case, you're getting it with someone who's at the top of a batting order. So many sources of speed that will emerge late in the year are very flawed players that also end up in the bottom third of the batting order. At least VR won't hurt you as much in some of the other categories as those future sources of steals will. So I want to give him one more shot. Like it's a little risky, but not that risky based on what I expect to be reasonable fab bids for him over the weekend. One of the other outfielders that I think is pretty interesting is in Houston, Jake Meyers. He's getting more chances to play in part because of the Michael Brantley injury. I think Meyers came back from his own injury before Brantley went on the IL. So Meyers versus Chaz McCormick could turn into a bit of an ongoing battle for playing time in center field once the Astros have everybody healthy. The problem there is both Meyers and Chaz McCormick are right-handed hitters, so you don't have a clear sort of platoon, and I think that could make it really challenging to figure out who's actually going to play. Both are more interesting players than they were given credit for, which kind of seems like a recurring theme in the Astros organization. I mean, obviously, Jeremy Peña's breakout this year was a big one. They let George Springer go last year and didn't seem to miss a beat with guys like this sort of filling in and just kind of doing what they do. Do you have a preferred target now that Meyers is healthy? Do you think one of these options in the Houston outfield between Meyers and McCormick can emerge to take over the bulk of the playing time in that spot?
I think it is Meyers. So I definitely have a preference for Meyers. And part of the reason for that, if I'm backtracking and remembering this correctly, was that when Myers came off the IL, McCormick got sent down. So they were making room for Myers by sending McCormick down. That to me was a big signal. And I do like the skill set from Myers just a little bit better. I think he's got a higher ceiling in terms of batting average, as long as he keeps the strikeouts down, which so far in a very limited set of plate appearances he is doing, and a little bit of power there. So yeah, I do have some interest in Myers, whereas I think with McCormick, he's more of a deep league. There's a term you've used, DVR, and roster spackle. I that's kind of how I'm viewing McCormick. I think he's got his uses in deeper leagues, but I don't expect it to be for the entirety of the second half.
Yeah, I watch too much HGTV, I think, since roster spackle is becoming something I say on a regular basis. Now I'm known for this term, and I'm a little ashamed of myself. A couple other names that I think are really interesting. Nolan Jones appears to be coming up for Cleveland. Really nice numbers, AAA, around a couple of injuries this year. I'm just a little skeptical because the K rate has been pretty high through most of his time in the minor leagues, so I'm worried that he's going to strike out more than 30% of the time. The good news is he does draw a lot of walks, and I'm trying to decide if the spike in ground balls is just the result of a relatively small sample at AAA, and maybe the injuries kind of changing the shape of his production. There's definitely some power. There's some speed there as well. 14 for 17 as a base stealer now over 122 games at AAA, going back to the start of last season for Nolan Jones. So in what types of leagues are you interested, and how aggressively do you think you'd be bidding on Jones where available this weekend?
Not that aggressively, but where I will be bidding is 15-team leagues, not 12-team leagues. Maybe have him on the watch list there because I don't think playing time is going to be an issue for Jones. I think, you know, we've been saying for how long that the Guardians have needs. They have holes to fill in the outfield, so there's clearly going to be playing time for him now that he's been moved off of third base. And he does have that interesting blend of skills that you were talking about. We just haven't necessarily seen them all at the same time. So there could be some a power-speed combination with a decent batting average, but as you were alluding to, the strikeout rate, that's got to be manageable. So there's potential there, there's ceiling, but I'm not particularly optimistic for seeing it in his first exposure to the major leagues. So definitely want him in my 15-teamers to see how much of that can come together for him. But it does feel a little aggressive to bid on him in 12-teamers.
Jones might not be the only player kind of breaking through this weekend. Esteury Ruiz, we talked about last week, might be getting an opportunity with the Padres. Unfortunately, it's the result of that scary collision that people may have seen that sent Jurickson Profar to a local hospital. I saw a diagnosis today. He was diagnosed with a concussion, which is not at all surprising based on what played out on the field at Petco. If the Padres turn to Ruiz, I think our expectation is that he's going to bring speed right away. And because he can bring speed, that's going to probably spike the bidding quite a bit. The problem I think we have to look at is the playing time volume is far from guaranteed. The roster spot is even far from guaranteed, even though Ruiz has been phenomenal at AA and AAA so far this season.
Yeah, and the quote that I saw, and unfortunately I don't remember the source of the quote, and I'm going to paraphrase anyway here, but that prior to the Profar injury, there wasn't a plan to bring Ruiz up anytime soon because while he clearly has incredible speed, that the organization didn't feel he was ready in terms of pretty much every other aspect of his game. Now, I sometimes wonder how sincere those statements are. Because those kinds of things seem to come up a lot, we're not bringing them up because they need to develop more, and you know there may be another reason. But I don't know if this really changes their clock or not. So we'll have to see. And it also does worry me that if maybe that is true, that he'll have trouble even translating those stolen base numbers to the major leagues because is he going to get on base enough? So If the bidding is really intense this weekend, I might not wind up with him anywhere because I don't know that how confident I am that he's really going to be a difference maker.
Yeah, it's a situation to monitor for sure over the next 48 hours or so leading into the time that those pickups get processed later this weekend. But definitely a name people have been watching now for a couple of weeks in Esteury Ruiz.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Speaking of the Padres, and if you aren't in a situation where Cal Raleigh's available, Jorge Alfaro is having a nice year. And it's kind of funny that AJ Preller is really kind of bringing the band together between, Alfaro being acquired, Profar being someone he brought in a couple years ago, Nomar Mazara. Those are all former Rangers prospects that I believe were brought into that organization by Preller when he was part of that front office. Anyway, Jorge Alfaro not hurting us in batting average right now. Gets a trip to Coors, a four-game trip to Coors during the upcoming week. Actually has outfield eligibility in some leagues too, which you never know. In a pinch, maybe you need to move him around a little bit. How much do you trust him from a skills perspective beyond the appeal that he brings with the schedule coming up this week with seven games and four of them being in Colorado?
I actually like the skills, which I know if you just look at the top line peripherals, starting with a 34.7% strikeout rate versus a 4.7% walk rate, that might sound kind of crazy. But this is somebody who every single season has hit for there was one year, the first year at the Marlins, where he hit .226, but otherwise has hit from a decent to good batting average because he's got that profile of like a 350, I say 350 BABIP hitter. I'm actually looking at his page right now. He has a career 376 BABIP rate over more than 1,500 plate appearances because he hits a ton of live drives and he never pops out. So that really neutralizes a lot of those strikeouts. There is a little bit of pop there. I wish he had a little bit more playing time, but again, a catcher, once you get below that threshold of, the top 12 to 15 or so, you're looking at everybody who's kind of a three game a week catcher anyway. So you've got somebody who's able to hit for a little bit of power, hit for a decent average, produce some runs, that's going to be a useful player.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you're in a situation where both Raleigh and Alfaro were available, you would prefer Raleigh, right?
I would prefer Raleigh by a lot. And the really surprising thing is he is less rostered on each of the three major platforms than Alfaro is. It's not a big difference. They're pretty equivalent. But Alfaro is actually the more rostered player right now.
Yeah, Alfaro is a good extreme example, though, of a player that I've always pretty much stayed away from because of his biggest flaw. You look at the walks compared to the strikeouts. You don't see a lot of players who keep regular big league jobs that strike out almost seven times as often as they walk. I mean, that's a really hard thing to do. Guys that strike out five times more than they walk are usually players I'm afraid of. That's like an Adelis Garcia sort of profile or a Ryan Mountcastle sort of profile. So Alfaro really takes that to another extreme. But at catcher, there's more swing and miss at that position than pretty much any other position. So the batting average expectations are generally lower. And because he makes the hard contact, like you mentioned, he's been able to get away with it for most of his career. I know the pandemic shortened 2020 season. He hit .226 that year. It was only 31 games. And even last season, a .244 from your catcher, that's not going to break you, especially when you find a way to pop a few homers. And last season, he was also 8-for-9 as a base stealer. So one of those guys that I think is having a better season than people realize and probably has just a little more value and a little more floor than I previously thought. Some other catchers that are kind of interesting. Eric Haas remains under-rostered in two catcher situations. He's 12% rostered on CBS right now. It's interesting that he has lowered his K rate so far this season. And I'd throw Carson Kelly in kind of to the same sort of tier where if you look at Kelly since he came back from that stint on the IL, he's been 16 games now with three homers, 11 RBIs, still having a hard time with average. He's got like a .204 average during that span. But he's only striking out about 11% of the time since coming back. So it seems like Carson Kelly is turning his season around, albeit not necessarily as quickly as some people would have hoped.
Well, one path that I maybe saw for Carson Kelly was that with the Diamondbacks having some outfield prospects, and of course, Corbin Carroll primary among them, that maybe Dalton Varsho would be get moved back to catcher, and then you'd see either a reduced role for Kelly or maybe he'd get traded. And so on the Thursday show, if you haven't listened to the Thursday version of this podcast yet from this week, check it out, because we talked to three beat writers. We talked to Zach Buchanan, was one of them. We got some great insight from all three of them, really fantasy relevant nuggets of information. And so I presented this idea to Zach Buchanan, and he said, no, the Diamondbacks really like what Carson Kelly does behind the plate. So if, probably Corbin Carroll isn't going to be up this year, but let's say Dominic Fletcher, if he comes up, it's probably going to be a different path, like David Peralta getting traded. So Kelly will likely have that opportunity to work out of the batting average funk and be more the player that we saw in 2019.
Yeah, I think with both Kelly and Haas, there's more potential value throughout the entire second half than there is with someone like Sebi Zavala, who's currently filling in for Yasmani Grandal. Looks like Grandal's coming back just after the All-Star break, so you got a little more time if you need Zavala as a temporary solution, but I think there's more stable skills from both Kelly and Haas if you're scrambling to fill out that second catcher spot. Two more infielders to get to real quick. Josh Smith in Texas playing a lot, Al, but he needs to hit the ball hard more often. I mean, it's a small sample so far, still looking for his first barrel on the season. That becomes a problem for me pretty quickly. I'm starting to look at him as more of a deep league speed dart than someone who's going to help in more than a couple categories.
Well, I mean, you could kind of view him as, Miles Straw, who hasn't been demoted from the leadoff spot yet. So when Miles Straw was leading off, there was some appeal there, even if he wasn't hitting for much of a batting average. But it is a limited appeal, and definitely 15-team versus 12-team.
Yeah, Josh Smith so far this season, and again, it's only 65 plate appearances, so it's 41 batted ball events, a 24.4% hard hit rate. That is the lowest of all the bats that we have talked about on this show so far. So that is scary, right? If you get a low barrel rate, but you're at least making hard contact, maybe you're hitting the ball on the ground too much, you could see the barrels maybe coming later on. It's really hard to see power coming from Josh Smith anytime soon, so he's very dependent upon keeping a spot high in that Rangers order. And then there's David Villar, who we've talked about a bit on our Tuesday show with the prospect focus, as someone that was putting up good power numbers at AAA Sacramento. I think he's still more of an NL-only league sort of player and like a deep dynasty league dart than someone that I'd actually want to take a chance on for a deep mix league.
Maybe 15-teamers. I mean, I'm going to look and see what my needs are on Sunday. I think VR at minimum will be a contingent bid for me in those 15-team leagues. He's already got two more barrels than Josh H. Smith has. So there's that in less than a week. He doesn't have much to show for it in terms of fantasy stats, but he's hit the ball hard in limited time. And the great news is that he's playing. I think he's played started every game since his promotion. So some encouraging things there for VR.
And real quick, too, I found a few names that really stood out to me. I was digging through our 16-team keeper league for some players who are still available that have been playing well over the last 4 weeks. They got a nice 28-day filter over at CBS, of course. Daniel Vogelbach hitting .263 with a .372 OBP, .512 slug in the last 28 days, 5 homers, 14 walks against 19 strikeouts. I think the thing that you'll notice if you look at his numbers for the season, he's lagging compared to other players who hit like he does because of where he has been hitting in the order and, of course, the quality of that Pittsburgh lineup. The Pirates' offense, I think, will be a tick better in the second half than it was in the first half. You get growth from someone like Cabrian Hayes. Brian Reynolds had that slow start that he's really turned around. You bring up O'Neill Cruz for the second half. Maybe a few other interesting prospects show up along the way. Wouldn't surprise me if those counting stats got a little bit better. Obviously, there's some risk that he becomes a left-handed bench bat for a contender at the trade deadline, too. But he's just playing at a level that's good enough to fill in on the corner in some leagues where he's actually available. 15-team leagues and deeper, Vogelbach, I think, should be rostered. Miguel Rojas doing a little bit of everything, hitting for average, a little bit of power, 4-for-4 as a base stealer as well. Always seems like a guy that gets to better numbers than you'd expect. It's hard to rely on him as more than a temporary solution in mixed leagues, but playing well in recent weeks and playing often. The name that I think is pretty interesting is actually two on this group that I'm not really sure what to make of these guys. They're two outfielders, Matt Vierling and Brian De La Cruz. And Vierling is showing power and good plate skills. He's only starting about two-thirds of the time right now, but he's beginning to move around and play some infield positions in addition to the occasional turn in the outfield. So I'm looking at Vierling versus Brian De La Cruz, and I'm curious if you're speculating on one to take over a larger share of playing time on his team, who do you actually like better at this point?
It's a tough call. I like them both as deep league guys that I'm probably stashing in the short term. I guess forced to pick one, I think that De La Cruz is a little bit more interesting because he's just really been hitting with a lot of power for the last few weeks, almost the last month. And it's a little less impressive because, whereas you say Vierling's playing about two out of every three games, De La Cruz is, it's more like one out of every two. But I think there could be an opportunity for him to get more playing time. And it wouldn't even necessarily take a trade of like Avisail Garcia to make that happen. There have been times over this season where De La Cruz has played pretty regularly. So there could just be a little bit of shifting in roles and he could up his playing time. But I'm really curious to see where this power surge is going to go for De La Cruz, because it was not something that I expected. And it's been impressive, even though it's been over a short period.
Yeah, De La Cruz is the type of player that usually I'm looking at in mono leagues or back during draft season and draft and hold, just because when a player like that finds more playing time, some good things can happen. There is raw power, a little bit of speed, I think, in that profile too, if memory serves me right. Let's take a look at some shallow league starting pitchers. Simple question as we begin the pitching section today. Nick Lodolo, is he shallow league viable for you as we look ahead to next week and beyond?
Not for me right now. And maybe I'm waiting the very limited major league track record over the extremely impressive minor league track record. But in a way, I guess I'm sort of counting on my fellow fantasy managers to do the same thing. I would be surprised if there was a lot of activity in my 12 teamers for Lodolo. So I'm willing to wait that out.
See, I'm trying to figure out how much of my view of Lodolo is co-managing a team where he's been stashed for a few weeks. You know, sometimes you get kind of tricked into thinking that your specific view of the player pool is more widely held than it is. One thing that I'm looking at with Lodolo that's pretty interesting is he does pretty well in Eno Saris' pitching model. The stuff number is really good at 113. The overall number at 101 is strong. And even the location number at 98.7 is very close to average. So I see quite a bit to like overall. Obviously, those minor league numbers that you alluded to are fantastic. I think I'm going to push him into that top 50, top 60 range among starting pitchers in terms of where I'm valuing him in the short term. I know you got to be careful with some of those home starts at Great American Ballpark, but pitching's been so difficult to find, and comparing his underlying numbers to a lot of other pitchers that we talk about on this show on a week-to-week basis, I think there is a bit of a gap between Lodolo and the field. So if he happened to have been dropped in some of the shallow leagues that were out there while he was on the injured list, I'm actually going to be a little more aggressive than Al, I think, and take that chance now, because you might not be able to take that chance a little bit later. One guy that I'm going to be a little more careful with, though, is Brian Bello. It's not because I don't believe in him long-term. It's because I just don't know. As they get healthier, I know Evaldi's got a rehab start coming up this weekend. Sale's supposed to be back on Tuesday. With the All-Star break, they probably get a little bit healthier yet, looking ahead to the second half. So Brian Bello's time in the Red Sox rotation could be coming to an end. Maybe he sticks around as a multi-inning reliever. We've kind of wondered about that for the better part of this season when he's come up on this show. So in what spots are you going to be bidding on Brian Bello this weekend?
In the waiver column, I did put a recommendation for 12-team bidding, which I think I left at 1-2% of FAB. So, you know, almost a nominal bid for all the reasons, DVR, that you just cited. I would be very surprised if he's in the rotation a month from now or even 3 weeks from now. And it possibly he goes back to AAA even sooner, even with all the starters that the Red Sox have on the IL right now. That first startup was obviously not, you know, not what you wanted to see. But I think we can, you know, cut any top prospect a break when they come up and make their first start, and especially when they face a team like the Guardians, who really don't swing and miss very often. So that's not so much the reason why I'm probably going to sit this one out for 12 teamers, but definitely going about 5% in 15 teamers, just on the hope that you just never know. Our colleague Nando DeFino says, you know, they always find a way. So, you know, maybe Bello finds a way, and you'll be glad that you had him.
Yeah, the payoff could be there eventually. I just wonder if it's going to be a little bit bumpy on the way, especially if the command doesn't come around as quickly as we'd like it to. Question here from Disco Dave. Should I drop Eric Lauer and add Tarek Skubal? Two guys that have really started the season well and then run into a bit of a rough stretch over the last month or so, at least where the ratios have kind of pushed back closer to what people might have expected back on draft day.
That's a tough one. I think I would not. Because I do view them, at least for the season, as being pretty equivalent. And I do worry that Skubal's going to struggle like he did last year, where he goes week after week after week with giving up a lot of home runs. So there's obviously reason to be concerned about both of them right now, but I think I would just stay the course.
Yeah, I like them pretty similarly the rest of the way in terms of core skills. I just like Lauer's situation a lot better. I think the Adrian Hauser injury further solidifies his hold in a rotation spot. Peralta's not close to coming back. You know, Skubal's role is safe, but the Tigers could get worse before they get better. I think that team context could ultimately be something that works against him a little bit, even if he can find a way to turn around his recent struggles, which I wouldn't be surprised by, but slight edge to Lauer because I just prefer the team context there by a reasonable margin at this point. Let's get to a few more pitchers that are probably widely available and could be useful in some shallow leagues. Reed Detmers, and this is me rounding up because I really believed in Reed Detmers back during draft season, and I finally dropped him last month. It's been a really strange season for him so far. Had the no-hitter, strikeouts haven't been there. He went down to AAA, rediscovered his old slider, had 14 strikeouts in a start, and now he's back up, and we're going to see him make a start before we get to his turn next week, so that's going to probably shape what people are willing to bid. The problem that I see, aside from everything that happened before he got demoted, is that he has the Dodgers coming up next week, so there are pretty much zero leagues where I'm going to pick up Reed Detmers and use him next week, and then you think about the All-Star break following that. A three-game week coming out of the break for the Angels, he's probably not as a young pitcher going to be in their first three, since young pitchers' innings are usually monitored really carefully coming out of the break. So you're probably waiting two whole weeks after picking him up before he's actually in your active lineup again, and then you're still not exactly sure what you're getting from a skills perspective, even though it's very encouraging that he had that great start at AAA and maybe rediscovered a pitch that will help him get more swing and miss this time around as a big league starter.
Well, you just validated every reason that I was summoning to not bid very much on Detmers this weekend. And you'd put out a tweet outlining your experience of, you bid a lot on him and you held on and then you let him go. And I felt like you were describing my experience with Detmers. So the one thing that I have to be careful not to do is not to back off of bidding from Detmers just because I really, really overbid the first time around.
Right. Yeah.
That's gone. That's a sunk cost. There, like you said, there are reasons in terms of him rediscovering the slider to be a little bit more hopeful. So probably find the middle ground and not back off completely. But that's a temptation that I'll definitely have to work against.
All right. So we agree that we're not putting Detmers in the shallow league conversation at all in the short term. It's more of a watch him in shallow leagues and look at how your roster fits together for next week, because you're almost certainly not using him against the Dodgers. There's no reason to do that. So it's just a weird part of the schedule for him to be back up for. Tough break if you're not in a first come, first serve sort of league. Luis Patino, we talked about him, I think, briefly last week. Still not back up with the Rays. Seems like it's going to happen sooner rather than later, but he's also in this group of young pitchers where they could be careful with him around the break. They could take advantage of the schedule, wait a little longer, keep the innings down, and then just let him go as much as he possibly can from the start of the second half onward. Do you still have interest in Luis Patino as a possible impact shallow league arm?
I think it's a very similar situation to how you just summarized Detmers. I do have some hope for that with Patino, but I feel like it's remote enough that he can just stay on the watch list. And so for right now, if he's available in 15 teamers, that's where I'm limiting my bidding.
Yeah, I keep waiting and waiting and waiting for that call-up to happen. I think the skills are good enough where he will be an impact pitcher, even in 12-team leagues. I'm not stashing him in 12-team leagues right now. It's got to be at least 15 teams. And still, again, tough because of all the injuries we're dealing with to hold players like this on our redraft rosters.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
One other stash consideration, again, if we're looking for ceiling, looking for players that could actually do something for us later on, what are you doing with Dustin May in leagues where he's available? Is he someone you expect to see back in a prominent role in that Dodgers rotation and contributing for us during the second half of the season?
It's possible. I'll admit he hasn't really been on my radar. It's been long enough, but... yeah, I'm going to wait on Dustin May. I just feel like there's not a lot of buzz right now. And trying to read the room with all these pitchers that we're talking about so far, I'm not going to be prioritizing him this week, but definitely need to keep him in mind for after the break.
He looked so good before he got hurt last year. 35-6 strikeout to walk ratio in 23 innings over five starts to begin the season. A 2.74 ERA, a 0.96 WHIP. We're talking about a guy that's over 100 big league innings now in parts of three different seasons. A sub-3 ERA while doing it, missing a lot of bats along the way. It might be a little early in some leagues, but don't forget about him completely because I think he's good enough to make a dent in shallow leagues. A lot of the guys we talk about regularly on this show are not good enough to do that, at least on a start-by-start basis. They're more of the streaming variety, which brings us to a lot of our other names. Drew Smyly back in for the Cubs. I mean, here's the next group of guys on the rundown. We've got Drew Smyly. We got Patrick Corbin. We got Garrett Hill, who I think is an Al guy. Like, there are Nando guys and there are Al guys. I think Garrett Hill's an Al guy. Spencer Howard's a Nando guy, but he's kind of a DVR guy, too, in the same way that Reed Detmers is, because I'm a glutton for punishment. And then there's Steven Matz, who I've never really liked, but feel like I kind of have to like because the strikeout minus walk rate has been good this year. The Cardinals are a good team. The park is not as hitter friendly as it was playing earlier in the season. It's sort of settling in as a more neutral environment. So I'm looking at this group, and of these five, I think Steven Matz is actually the guy that I like the most if I have to pick one up and think about using him right away.
Yeah, I included him in this week's waiver comp for one reason is that he could be back next Sunday. So initially it looked like maybe it was going to be a two-start week where Matz would be activated for, I think it was a Tuesday start. But his most recent AAA rehab start, he was, I think, about 15 pitches shy of where they wanted him to be. So looks like he's going to make another rehab start. So that could still line him up for a start this week. I wouldn't want to use Matz this week, but I'd rather pick him up now and then start using him after the break, see how he does, if he does pitch on Sunday. And yeah, what you were saying, like the strikeout to walk ratio was really good. Just a lot of line drives, a few too many home runs. But those are ratios that I would expect for Matz are going to normalize. The ERA alternatives had the estimators have Matz right now, even though his real ERA is above 6. They have him as like a 3 ERA guy so far. I'm not sure I buy that rest of season, but gives you an idea of what he could be if he just doesn't give up so many line drives and cuts back on the homers a bit.
Yeah, I'm definitely not there as a low threes ERA sort of thing with Matz, but definitely on my radar as a pickup now that he's closer to coming back from the injured list. Hopefully we get more updates before the end of the weekend. I want to ask you, what is it about Garrett Hill that you actually kind of like, and where's the cutoff for you in terms of where you'd actually want to use him?
Cut off his 15 teamers. The reasons for liking him, strikeouts at AA and AAA, especially AA. And yeah, he did it as a 26-year-old, but I'm, you know, thinking of him as like the David VR pitchers right now, doing well at the minors, even though he's old for a prospect. And opportunity. I mean, opportunity is probably the bigger part of that reasoning. Just as long as he's not awful, I think he'll have a rotation spot going forward with the Tigers. And, you know, even if he can be like 8 strikeouts per 9, maybe even 7.5 strikeouts per 9, with the Tigers. That's going to be useful in a 15-teamer.
Fair. All right. I'm looking at him really carefully with the matchups and trying to pick my spots if Garrett Hill ends up on any of my rosters in the short term. But there could be a longer term opportunity there than I expected when he first got that promotion. The Patrick Corbin question is, do you see anything that's different enough in the profile to believe that what he has done more recently is actually real? If you look at Baseball Savant, it seems to be something different with his fastball, more velocity, and it's looking like an uptick in sinkers and a downturn in four-seamers, which to me is going to require some more video review to see how much is actually going on there. But Corbin has just been so surprisingly bad going all the way back to the beginning of last season. I am very afraid to trust him, even if we see some subtle changes in pitch mix.
I'm not seeing it. I mean, you're kind of going a level deeper than I've gone in terms of looking at the pitch mix, just in terms of the results, you know, look, the indicators. I am not seeing anything there that's giving me a lot of confidence in Patrick Corbin. So after each of the last few starts, I go back and look, is there something there? I'm not seeing it yet.
Velo for me is the one thing that I think is a little bit different, but it would still be 15-team leagues and my ratios are broken, which I have teams like that. So maybe it's more of a min bid, got to get someone, got to get innings, kind of playing the volume game sort of thing with Patrick Corbin. But if he's turned a corner, I'm not quite seeing it yet. So do your own research on that one and see if you can find something that makes sense to you along the way. The Spencer Howard thing, I mean, the numbers at AAA weren't that bad. The ERA is close to 11 so far this season. He's a two-start pitcher, two at home if he stays in the rotation for both turns. The first one's against Oakland, which who wouldn't I throw against Oakland right now? And then the second one's against Seattle, so it's not easy, but it's not the worst of the worst possible matchups, right? He's not snagging the Yankees or the Astros or one of the teams that you're consistently staying away from. So can I interest you in Spencer Howard as a deeper league pickup?
You absolutely can. And I have not really considered myself a Howard guy, so I've not really been in the same boat with you and Nando on that. But in looking back at what he did last year, where the surface level stats were pretty bad, but if you drill down another level and you look at the plate discipline profile, it was pretty good. I think his CSW was above 28%. I think the contact rate on in zone pitches was under 80%, which is actually outstanding. So there were some things to be encouraged by there, and then very good numbers. You said decent or not bad numbers at AAA this year. I actually feel like that undersells a little bit. I thought he put up some nice numbers at Round Rock, and that combined with some encouraging things from 2021 with those two matchups, I'd give him a whirl. I wouldn't do it with my first place team, but you know, if the stakes were a little bit lower and I'm just trying to add some bulk and catch up, I absolutely would try Spencer Howard this week.
Yeah, I'm chasing, and I think he stands out to me. And the results, the K's were there at AAA. 60 strikeouts and 46 in a third inning so far this season. Kept the ball in the park as well. Only 19 walks. Ratios were solid. A 3.69 ERA is pretty good. 1.26 WHIP. You'd like to see a little better against AAA competition, but I'm cautiously optimistic. Pitching model also points to a guy that might be quite a bit better than people realize. Again, when you're looking at the surface numbers, which have been just atrocious for Spencer Howard in very limited innings so far with the Rangers. A couple other names that I want to bring up here as we look for other sources of pitching. This is more about matchups for the rest of this group. You've got Daniel Lynch with a two-step this week. Home against the Tigers, but then road against the Blue Jays. Daniel Lynch constantly on our rundowns and constantly a source of frustration. Are you trying to push him in for volume situations this week?
No. I mean, I could conceive maybe if I had a team that was pretty far down, if he were one of the better options available, maybe give it a try, but I think that's asking for trouble with that Toronto matchup. And in reality, I'm probably not trying that anywhere this week.
I think the appeal of Lynch is more your deep keeper in dynasty leagues where you're playing for the future. You want to see if he figures it out over the course of the second half when the stakes are really like zero. It's more just, hey, maybe I found a cheap in-season pickup that I can hold on to. I think that's the sweet spot for me right now with Daniel Lynch based on how things have gone over the course of this season. But I think the other name that's kind of standing out to me from a two-star perspective, at least as a streamer, is Josh Winder. They're not necessarily easy matchups, home against the Brewers and home against the White Sox. Winder's skills, I think, are probably better than we've seen so far. I'm a little surprised. It's only 27 strikeouts and 40 in a third innings. Good control, only 12 walks over that workload. What do you make of Josh Winder getting this chance for the Twins?
I mean, that's the kind of profile in a two-start week, if you're not too scared of the matchups, that can work. I mean, you need to have a strikeout per inning pitcher in a two-start week to help you out. But yeah, I'm a little underwhelmed. I would be okay with him in a 15 teamer. I'm just not sure he's going to be a priority when I look at all the options that are available.
All right, we got more streamers for two start weeks to consider. Michael Pineda at Kansas City and at Cleveland. Same matchup for Bo Brisky, if that does anything for you.
Hard no on both of them. I wanted so badly with those matchups to say yes, but Pineda is getting no swing and miss this year. Brisky's getting a little bit more, but the overall profile isn't very good.
I actually like Brisky more than Pineda and probably more than Winder and Lynch as a short-term sort of ad, just based on how the Tigers are letting him go right now. That's not necessarily a go-get-him-everywhere sort of endorsement, but more of a put him on your contingency bid list if you need some volume this week. Daniel Castano in the Marlins rotation gets two at home against the Pirates and the Phillies. I think that's actually sort of playable in deep leagues, but probably more borderline than anything with fewer than 15 teams.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned Braxton Garrett last week. Another good streaming opportunity for him, home against Pittsburgh. Even if you're generally skeptical of him, this is a great spot to get him into your lineup.
I agree. I'm going to try to this week. And yeah, that's a great one-start stream, obviously. And I'm not a skeptic. I really like what he's done in terms of the last several starts. I want to say maybe four in a row, where he's been double-digit percentages in terms of whiffs, high chase rates, a whole lot of contact in the zone, all good stuff. So I'd feel great about that.
Last pitching name on the starter side that I want to throw at you is Jake Odorizzi. Does he fit into the, yeah, I'd use pretty much anyone against Oakland group?
I think so. I'm not enthusiastic about it, but I'd have a hard time saying no to that.
It shouldn't cost much either in terms of fab on the roster and then off again. Obviously, if you're in a league that has innings restrictions, the low strikeout rate can hurt you a little bit more there. So it's less of a clear stream situation in those conditions. But I think generally speaking, I do like Odorizzi in that matchup. Let's talk about some relievers. We just got some news before we started recording that the Rangers have removed Joe Barlow, at least temporarily, as their closer. So I said at the beginning of the show, didn't look like a great week for saves. Well, maybe there's at least an option or two to take a chance on in Texas. Now, the good news is we get a whole weekend series to play before we have to actually make a decision. But it's also possible that there won't be a clear-cut replacement. There won't be a save opportunity, and we'll have to go into Sunday night taking our best guess at who that replacement is going to be. Al, as you look at the Rangers relievers behind Joe Barlow, is there anybody that stands out to you as the best alternative for saves?
I would say probably Matt Moore, but I could definitely see the Rangers playing matchups here. So I don't think I'd be looking to really bid on any of the candidates here with all that much gusto. Jose Leclerc was somebody I think we talked about a few weeks ago when he first got activated. He's not been his old self. He's not been bad, but just not somebody to me that looks like he would run away with the job. So I have a feeling this is going to be a frustrating situation where no one reliever really is going to be able to help anybody that much.
It's possible, and Barlow could get the job back in a week or two, and the time in between could just be fab poorly spent. I did see Dennis Santana's name mentioned by one of the Rangers writers. So that's a possibility looking at his numbers for the season. K rate is surprisingly low for Santana compared to his swinging strike rate. Hasn't had any issues with home runs so far this year. Walking batters at his lowest rate since 2018. That was 3 2/3 innings. That was a meaningless number of innings. So a lot going right for Dennis Santana right now. So I think that could actually make some sense. I like the Moore call as well. I mean, obviously you can only throw one dart in most of these situations. So I think the edge for me probably goes to Santana. That being said, they have a million lefties in that bullpen. So being a lefty does not disqualify Matt Moore from getting that chance in this situation.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But he stands out, but not so much that, yeah, for example, he and Santana maybe could be sort of platooned in high leverage situations. But as you said, we'll have a few days to see how this plays out. Hopefully the Rangers have some save opportunities.
Yeah, I'm looking to see, is Garrett Richards showing us anything in the bullpen? It doesn't look too bad, so maybe that's a way to try and pump up his value a little bit. But if you gave me one shot, Dennis Santana is that guy for now. And that, of course, can change based on what they do over the weekend. Are you taking any chances in the Dodgers bullpen? Craig Kimbrel couldn't finish out a save on Thursday night, and that was a game in which Bruzdar Graterol actually left with an injury. Is there someone else to speculate on to possibly stash in the Dodgers pen? Because if it's me, it's probably Evan Phillips, but I still don't have a high degree of confidence that they would move away from Craig Kimbrel so long as he's healthy.
Yeah, I kind of have the same suspicion too. So I'm probably not going to do much there this weekend. I did mention, I want to say maybe a week or two ago, that I could see Alex Vesia maybe getting some save opportunities, but you mentioned Phillips. If it wasn't Kimbrel, I don't know that either Phillips or Vesia would be getting enough opportunities to help in fantasy. So I think I'm sitting this one out too, and probably watching Kimbrel just keep on getting opportunities.
Yeah, I think aside from Phillips, Yency Almonte, and then Alex Vesia, you mentioned, those are the three guys that I'm just watching from a usage perspective, trying to see if there's any indication of who they would really turn to if Kimbrel does get hurt or pitches poorly enough long enough to lose the job. But the underlying numbers for Kimbrel actually do look better than the surface numbers. Dodger fans don't want to hear it. People that have Kimbrel on their teams right now don't want to hear it, but it doesn't look like an obvious will lose job for sure sort of situation for Craig Kimbrel right now, as frustrating as things have been in recent weeks. That is going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Thanks to those of you who tuned in live on YouTube. Most Fridays, we go live at 4 Eastern on the Athletic Fantasy YouTube channel. So be sure to hit the like button on this video if you watch this there. Give us a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you listen to the podcast version of the show. And if you'd like to check out Al's waiver column, plus all the other great content that we have at The Athletic, $1 a month gets you in the door for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. On Twitter, Al is at AlMelchiorBB. I am at Derek Van Riper. Good luck with your pickups this weekend. The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast returns on Tuesday.